throw the constitution by force of arms. Sole purpose of visit, was the British broadcaster Gilbert Harding's response to that. Nowadays, such levity will see you banged up. Clinton Richard Dawkins, then, is the name on my birth certificate and passport, and my father was Clinton John. As it happened, he was not the only C. Dawkins whose name appeared in the Times as the father of a boy born in the Escatine Nursing Home, Nairobi, in March 1941. The other was the Reverend Cuthbert Dawkins, Anglican missionary, and no relation. My bemused mother received a shower of congratulations from bishops and clerics in England, unknown to her, but kindly calling down God's blessings upon her newborn son. We cannot know whether the misdirected benedictions intended for Cuthbert's son had any improving effect on me, but he became a missionary like his father, and I became a biologist like mine. To this day, my mother jokes that I might be the wrong one. I am happy to say that more than just my physical resemblance to my father reassures me that I am not a changeling, and was never destined for the church. Clinton first became a Dawkins family name when my great-great-great-grandfather, Henry Dawkins, 1765 to 1852, married Augusta, daughter of General Sir Henry Clinton, 1738 to 95, who, as Commander-in-Chief of British forces from 1778 to 1782, was partly responsible for losing the American War of Independence. The circumstances of the marriage make the commandeering of his name by the Dawkins family seem a bit cheeky. The following extract is from a history of Great Portland Street, where General Clinton lived. In 1788, his daughter eloped from this street in a hackney coach with Mr. Dawkins, who eluded pursuit by posting half a dozen other hackney coaches at the corners of the street leading into Portland Place, with directions to drive off as rapidly as possible, each in a different direction. I wish I could claim this ornament of the family escutcheon as the inspiration for Stephen Leacock's Lord Ronald, who flung himself upon his horse and rode madly off in all directions. I'd also like to think that I inherited some of Henry Dawkins's resourcefulness, not to mention his ardour. This is unlikely, however, as only 1/32nd part of my genome is derived from him. 1/64th part is from General Clinton himself, and I have never shown any military leanings. Tess of the D'Urbervilles and The Hound of the Baskervilles are not the only works of fiction that invoke hereditary throwbacks to distant ancestors, forgetting that the proportion of genes shared is halved with every generation and therefore dies away exponentially, or it would if it were not for cousin marriage, which becomes ever more frequent the more distant the cousinship, so that we are all more or less distant cousins of each other. It is a remarkable fact, which you can prove to yourself without leaving your armchair, that if you go back far enough in a time machine, any individual you meet who has any living human descendants at all must be an ancestor of everybody living. When your time machine has travelled sufficiently far into the past, everybody you meet is an ancestor either of everybody alive in 2013 or of nobody. By the method of reductio ad absurdum, beloved of mathematicians, you can see that this has to be true of our fishy ancestors of the Devonian era. My fish has to be the same as your fish, because the absurd alternative is that your fish's descendants and my fish's descendants stayed chastely separate from each other for 300 million years, yet are still capable of interbreeding today. The only question is how far back you have to go to apply that argument. Clearly not as far as our fishy forebears, but how far? Well, hurdling swiftly over the detailed calculation, I can tell you that if the Queen is descended from William the Conqueror, you quite probably are too. And, give or take the odd illegitimacy, I know I am, as does almost everybody with a recorded pedigree. Henry and Augusta's son, Clinton George Augustus Dawkins, 1808-71, was one of the few Dawkinses actually to use the name Clinton. If he inherited any of his father's ardour, he nearly lost it in 1849, during an Austrian bombardment of Venice, where he was the British consul. I have a cannonball in my possession, sitting on a plinth, bearing an inscription on a brass plate. I don't know whose is the authorial voice, and I don't know how reliable it is, but, for what it's worth, here is my translation, from French, then the language of diplomacy. One night, when he was in bed, a cannonball penetrated the bedcovers and passed